Okay, so I am sitting in the Robert Adams splendour of Edinburgh's old college, and rather like being at the end of a retro computer game, I am now facing the big boss, chairman of the Festival Fringe, Sir Tim O'Shea, who is also the principal and vice-chancellor of the University of Edinburgh. So I think it probably makes sense to ask the obvious question first, which is just how important are the festivals to the city?
The festivals are immensely important. They collectively give tremendous cultural life. They are tremendously important to the young people in the city because they are a way of learning what it's like to be an actor, a producer, a publicist. It's a tremendous learning experience, and of course it's economically very important to the city.
Is there a number attached to the economic importance?
Well, there are various estimates. The numbers that have been used for the Fringe come around 120 million, and that actually makes quite good sense when you say to yourself 2 million tickets, getting towards 2 million tickets are sold. If you imagine a visitor in a given day, maybe buying two tickets, staying in a bed and breakfast, buying a meal, buying a couple of drinks, buying an evening meal, then once you start thinking of it like that, then that number has to be a bit of an underestimate. But it's clear that, you know, two Fringe tickets, a lunch, a dinner, a couple of glasses of beer, and a bed and breakfast is going to cost you, probably a bit more than £100.
The university has slightly hidden but nonetheless vital role in the Fringe, because of course it's university venues like Teviot and the Pleasant, Adam House next door. How is it decided which venues get to run what?
We've got a very experienced festivals office, and the different venue promoters negotiate. Obviously there's a lot of history, so that if a venue organizer has been in a location for a number of years, has done well with it, clearly the assumption is they'll be negotiated with and they will probably stay put. But in the last analysis, it is a decision taken by the professional staff in the festivals office of the university. And they look at the different venues they've got, look at who wants to run them on what sort of basis, and look at what sort of track record. Because some of these are quite big. The Pleasance is obviously big. The area around George Square is big. The area Bristow Square is big. The Teviot, which is obviously a student union.
The oldest purpose-built student union in the world, I believe.
That's correct. Yes, I mean, I think it's partly because Edinburgh students always lived in the city. So it's the first purpose-built student union in the world, and they've also got the longest produced and first student newspaper in the world.
And what impact is Summer Hall as a venue, and is it going to have? You know, largest privately owned arts venue, I think, in Europe. You know, the size of an Oxbridge College, but obviously in the old Vet College.
We're delighted with what's happened at Summer Hall. When we moved the Vet School out to its wonderful new buildings out at Easter Bush, we decided that we needed to sell the old site. We had an offer, a financially appropriate offer for the site, and there was an agenda was sketched out to us in terms of the purposes to which it would be put. Summer Hall has been very successful. I think, you know, you just visit it. The vibrancy is wonderful, the great mix of things that are going on. The 60s building next to it has been turned into what's called the Tech Cube, so there's lots of start-up companies. For many students from the university, whether it's art students who are graduating or computer science students who are graduating, Summer Hall provides a very attractive space where they can go and continue their creative endeavour or their computing endeavour or others. So we think it's wonderful.
And last night I was at a my second time at seeing a performance called Running with the Firm. And what was so interesting was I'd seen the fourth performance very early in the Fringe, and seeing the distance travelled at the end of the Fringe was very exciting. And your background in the Open University, there must be a similar sort of relationship to how you conceive of academia in the Fringe there.
Yes, I think, well, I think that's one of the points of view of the Fringe that one really has to hold, which is that it is a wonderful learning experience. And, you know, the folks who come here, they have an opportunity for 3 and a bit weeks to put something on, to refine it, to learn from it, and to learn in all different dimensions, to learn about the acting, to learn about the production, to learn about the publicity. Two of my four children have brought shows to the Fringe, and it's one this year, in past years, sometimes both of them, and they learn enormously. And that is, I think, that ability to come to Edinburgh and learn about some aspect of the creative arts, and, you know, and refine it, and then see how audiences and other people respond. It's just wonderful.
A few years back, there was a play by an O'Shea that was at Pleasance in the Caverns, and it was about the grandmother's experiences after the war. Was that?
Yes, that play was written by my daughter Catherine, and it was about my mother's experience as a refugee. And it was staged in a partially converted bomb shelter.
Yeah. There's a bomb shelter under Pleasance. Yes. I don't remember that, but
yeah. Yeah. It was actually a bomb shelter that had been turned into a performance space, and Catherine was the first person to use it. Also, it's been used subsequently. In fact, it's being used this year.
And one of the obvious questions in the run-up to next year, speaking of bomb shelters, I think of one of your funny comments about having to learn to nod non-committally as people complain about particular Fringe shows to you. How are your non-committal answers regarding the independence referendum coming along?
I mean the Fringe and the shows in the Fringe, it's an enormous mirror. It reflects everything that's happening. I mean, so inevitably, and given the way the Fringe works, inevitably there will be productions that relate in all sorts of ways to the you know, that debate that's happening in Scottish society. I think that's a good thing. It allows people to take different views, allows people to respond to different views.
And is the Fringe getting too big? Is that even possible?
I don't think that proposition makes much sense to me. I mean, you know, the city of Edinburgh is a certain physical size. At the moment, people still find new venues. We have Summer Hall is a very good example. This is only the second year Summer Hall has been a big Fringe venue. This year's the first time that Paterson's Land has come. It's a partnership between the University and the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland, also a venue for Scottish Opera and for the National Theatre of Scotland, a brand new venue of reasonable scale. I think people will still find venues. I think the growth will depend on the number of creative folks who have works that they want to test.
And obviously you're a leader of civil society in the city. Is enough being done by the 49 weekers, the guys who live in Edinburgh all the time, to engage with the Fringe, or are they being too blasé about it?
I think what we're seeing is a steadily increasing pattern of interaction, and I think that's a very good thing. And we're seeing the Fringe spreading, and you know, there are aspects of it in Leith, in Musselburgh. You can pick up your tickets in Glasgow. For example, in comedy, there is a Best of the Edinburgh Fringe that is shown every night in the Glasgow Stand. So you get a pattern, and I think the citizens are, you know, relaxed about, for the most part, about the way the Royal Mile is used. That's a very wonderful showcase about the way the space around the Mound is used. So I think we're seeing a steadily increasing positive engagement. The Lord Provost hosted a very nice reception for international visitors associated with the Fringe in the city chambers. So we're seeing steadily more engagement, and I think that's a good thing.
We like to finish these interviews by asking performers what shows that they want their audience to go and see after they've been to their show three or four or five times. So perhaps what we should do is ask, are there other fringes around the world or other festivals that you can recommend?
Well, the one I'm particularly interested in, Austin, Texas, has a festival in March of focused very much on country music, but also and particularly on progressive country and Western music, which is something I'm very fond of. And that has also developed a technological dimension. So I would think that's, I mean, for me, if you ask me which overseas festival would I be most interested in going to, then it would be the one in Austin, Texas.
Well, that explains the Stetson hat. Tim O'Shea, thank you very much for talking with Fringe Review.
Good. Great pleasure.